Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today you'll hear Seth chat with The Crown's Matt Smith, who answers a few more questions backstage in Studio 8G just for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
Democrats won a shocking victory in the deepest red state in America last night, defeating Republican Roy Moore in the Senate race in Alabama and delivering a stunning blow to both Steve Bannon and President Trump. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Democrats haven't had much to celebrate since last year's election, and they could hardly contain themselves last night, as evidenced by the victory rally at Doug Jones' headquarters. The crowd there was so excited that C-SPAN caught the DJ playing Jones off the stage with Teach Me How to Dougie.
Thank you. Thank you.
First thing, no one ever teach Doug Jones how to Dougie. That is not for him. Second thing, to whoever was smoking weed and watching election results, safe to say that was the best moment of your life? Because that was definitely the most beat ever played on C-SPAN. At least not since Bernie Sanders released his rap album under the name Sean Don't Own Any Combs. Of course, one big question after the results came in was how would Donald Trump react? And surprisingly, he seemed to strike a conciliatory tone.
President Trump just tweeted minutes ago saying, "Congratulations to Doug Jones on a hard-fought victory. The write-in votes played a very big factor, but a win is a win. The people of Alabama are great, and the Republicans will have another shot at this seat in a very short period of time. It never ends."
There is no way Donald Trump wrote that tweet. He probably went to the bathroom and forgot his phone, and someone else said, "This is our chance, write something decent." I was like, how much time until he's back? And they said, well, he had two Big Macs, two filet of fish, and a milkshake. So, I don't know, an hour? 3 minutes? There's no way of knowing what that does to a human body. But hey, how bad is this for Trump, really? It's not like he pulled out all the stops and staked his agenda, his reputation, and his presidency on backing an accused child molester, thinking there was no way he could lose in the deepest red state in America, right?
The President of the United States has officially endorsed Roy Moore for Senate.
President Trump is jumping in with both feet for Moore.
President Trump has just recorded a last-minute robocall for Roy Moore.
President Trump tweeted today that, quote, "the people of Alabama will do the right thing," unquote, and vote for Republican Roy Moore.
According to the GOP candidate's campaign, the president talked to Moore over the phone and cheered, "Go get him, Roy."
I think he's going to do very well. We don't want to have a liberal Democrat in Alabama.
We don't need a liberal person in there, a Democrat. So get out and vote for Roy Moore.
Why does he say it like that? He's pronouncing Roy Moore's name like he's playing it on a tuba. Get out and vote for Roy Moore. Make America great again. Can we hear that one more time? Now, the closing weeks. The closing weeks of this campaign tell us a lot about how this happened, with the allegations looming over him. Moore essentially disappeared from the campaign trail, spending long stretches out of the spotlight, avoiding rallies and interviews. And his extreme views were difficult for his surrogates to defend. For example, Moore had said that Muslims should be barred from serving in Congress. On Tuesday, CNN's Jake Tapper asked Moore campaign spokesman Ted Crockett to explain that view, and let's just say it did not go well.
Judge Moore has also said that he doesn't think a Muslim member of Congress should be allowed to be in Congress. Why? Under what provision of the Constitution?
Because you have to swear on the Bible. When you are before, I had to do it. I'm an elected official, three terms. I had to swear on a Bible. You have to swear on a Bible to be an elected official in the United States of America. He alleges that a Muslim cannot do that ethically, swearing on the Bible.
You don't actually have to swear on a Christian Bible. You can swear on anything, really. I don't know if you knew that. You can swear on a Jewish Bible.
Oh, no, I swore on the Bible. I've done it three times.
I'm sure you have. I'm sure you've picked a Bible, but the law is not that you have to swear on a Christian Bible. That is not the law. You don't know that? All right, Ted Crockett with
the
Moore.
I don't know. I know that Donald Trump did it when we made him president.
Because he's Christian and he picked it.
Look at him. He looks like the last hole in a miniature golf course. Moore eventually resurfaced on Monday night at a rally designed to appeal to Trump voters by barring one of Trump's slogans, "Drain the Swamp." They even went so far as to decorate the venue in the spirit of that slogan.
This event has been promoted as the Drain the Swamp rally. And if you can see the signage behind me, that's the message this campaign wants to resonate with voters who come here tonight as they walk past the literal swamp this campaign has built with fake alligators and foliage.
So given a choice, the accused sexual predator said, "We should do it like a prom theme." Dress it up like a prom theme. Now, you'd think in the closing hours of the campaign, Moore would have wanted to avoid any mention of the child molestation accusations against him. And yet, one of the introductory speakers at the rally, a friend who served with Moore in Vietnam, told a bizarre story about how they and a third guy ended up at a brothel with young girls.
He was introduced to Roy and me, and he said, "We're hanging out with you guys tonight. I had a couple of beers my last night in Vietnam." He said, "Sure, we'll do that." He said, "I know a private club down in the city that we can go to." And he took us to this place, which turned out to be a brothel. And Roy turned to me, in less time than it took for someone to come up to us. And there were certainly pretty girls, and they were girls. They were young, some were probably very young. Roy said to me, "We shouldn't be here, I'm leaving."
That's your argument? He can't be a child molester because one time he didn't? Cool. I remember one game where O.J. had 140 rushing yards, 3 receptions, and no murders. But Moore, of course, had a key backer who stood by him, former White House chief strategist Steve Bannon. Bannon, who has cultivated the myth that he's some sort of political strategic genius, was an early and vocal Moore supporter. But these results have once again deflated Bannon's self-styled reputation as a political mastermind because Bannon made mistake after mistake. Just take his comments from Monday's rally, in which Bannon, the former Goldman Sachs trader who's lived in Virginia and California, went out of his way to brag about the elite schools he went to while responding to MSNBC host Joe Scarborough.
"Good morning, Joe. You called me a Yankee the other day. Just because I'm from Richmond, Virginia, the capital of the Confederacy." "That's right, Joe. I got into some Yankee schools, Georgetown and Harvard, that I don't think you made the cut on, brother."
So there you go. Bannon says Scarborough went to a much crappier school than he did. So where did Scarborough go to school anyway?
"Joe Scarborough went to the University of Alabama."
How stupid do you have to be to insult the University of Alabama in Alabama? Who do you think they're going to support, Roll Tide or someone who looks like he literally rolled up in the tide? Of course, Moore himself didn't have much to say in the closing weeks of the campaign, but he did seem to be making a statement by defiantly riding to the polls yesterday on his horse to cast his ballot. Is it just me, or does it look like even his horse is trying to get away from him? Can we hear what the horse is saying?
"Get off of me, you creep."
Now, This race was obviously unique in many ways, but let's not act like Moore was some sort of aberration who was isolated from the rest of the GOP. He was supported, of course, by the president, who was the leader of the Republican Party, and the Republican National Committee. And yet some Republicans were so ashamed they couldn't even bring themselves to say Moore's name. Like Jeff Sessions, an Alabama resident who vacated the Senate seat to become attorney general. Sessions was asked yesterday who he voted for and did everything he could to avoid answering the question.
I voted absentee, yes. And I value the sanctity of the ballot. And I would say the people of Alabama are good and decent and wonderful people. I've been proud to serve for 20 years in the Senate. And they'll make the right decision, I'm sure.
I haven't seen Sessions sweat that much since every time he's testified before Congress. Come on, Mr. Attorney General. Who'd you vote for?
I don't recall.
Of course, Moore's message was a muddled mix of lawless theocracy and cultural grievances, and in the end, that message was rejected. But this victory is owed primarily to black voters and especially black women who came out in huge numbers and voted overwhelmingly to save the country from the nightmare of a demagogue and accused child molester serving in the Senate. Meanwhile, Republicans are left to explain why a party that nominated, almost elected, such a man should ever be trusted again. Ted Crockett, do you have anything to say about that? This has been A Closer Look. Our guest had his breakout role, playing the 11th Doctor in England's longest-running sci-fi series, Doctor Who. He stars as Prince Philip in The Crown, which will begin streaming its second season on Netflix this Friday. Please welcome to the show, Matt Smith, everybody. Welcome.
Hello.
I am...
Hello. Sorry.
Very... You're everything all right?
Well, I've eaten... Like, I just eat so much in this city and...
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, you wear a suit and I've just got a bit of fat for it.
Yeah. And then we put like cookies in the dressing room and stuff.
Oh,
I hope
man.
We weren't to blame as well.
No, okay. Absolutely. You've all been marvelous. Thank you for having me, Seth. It's good to be here.
I am a big fan of the show. I'm so happy it's coming back. I would imagine this was a very exciting role to get, and yet you had some family members who were not that excited when you were first cast.
My granddad wasn't very happy, yeah. He's like, bloody hell, you're not playing that bloody Burke, are you? He's from Nottingham, which that probably doesn't make much sort of sense to you, but it's in the north of England, or the middle of England.
And he called him a Burke?
A Burke.
Okay, gotcha. Meaning?
Meaning an idiot.
Okay, gotcha.
Because my granddad thinks that Prince Philip is an idiot, but he's not. He's a very astute, clever, charming, intelligent man, I like to think. But so is my granddad. He's, you know...
And you actually met Prince William.
I met William and Harry, yes.
And had the show been on yet?
No.
Okay, gotcha.
I was presented to William at the polo.
Oh, that's the most British thing that anyone's ever said
yes,
on the show.
Yes, I know. Well, I was presented to William.
That was like a hat trick. Presented Prince William the polo.
Yeah. Well, and I'm not really very posh either. I mean, I talk posh when I'm nervous.
No,
so I'm
look,
nervous
your grandfather says Burke. We know where you're from.
Yeah, exactly. And the lady next to me said, oh, yeah. He's playing, and I thought, don't do it. He's playing Prince Philip. And I went, oh, Christ, she's done it. And all he did was he went, legend.
That's great.
I went, what? And he went, he's a legend. And I went, yeah, he is a legend.
Oh, that's great. It's very nice to hear that from Prince William.
Yeah.
Now, this is an interesting time of the show. It's going to keep going, but both you and Claire are going to be recast.
We've been moved on.
Yeah, because they're going to get older actors to play them
yes.
older.
Yes.
It has not been cast yet, right? Is that correct?
Well,
okay,
I
so
know.
You maybe know.
I maybe know. I mean, I don't know if I know. I'm not meant to know, but I maybe know.
Okay, yeah. Now, is part of you, though, oh, that's who they think I'm going to look like in 10 years?
If it's the person that it could be, I was just totally flattered.
Oh, thought, great.
Oh, marvelous.
Oh, that's exciting. Because this happened once before. We were talking backstage. One of my favorite movies is In Bruges.
Yes.
You played, there was a flashback scene where you played a young Ralph Fiennes.
Yes.
Which is a fan, I mean, that is, you can't ask for more than that.
And it's Martin McDonagh, and it's such a great film, and Ralph is one of my favorite actors. I just think he's electric, so.
So is this on the level of, is this Ralph good, or is this maybe a little lower? Like, where are you at here?
No, well, you know, look, I don't want to kind of speculate too much, but yeah, no, he's brilliant.
Good. All right, well,
if it's the person that I think it might be, and he's incredibly handsome as well, which, you know.
All right, good. Well, fingers marvelous. Crossed for you,
fingers
I really
crossed,
hope.
I know. I've morphed into someone far better looking than I.
I want to ask about this, because obviously when you take on something like playing a member of the royal family, there's going to be intense sort of fan attention to it. But you maybe did something that has even more fan attention when you played the 11th Doctor.
Yes.
On Doctor Who.
When I played Harry in Bruges. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So when you got that role to play the Doctor, did you understand that world you were stepping into?
Not really. Nothing. Mm. Nothing can really prepare you for the sort of enormity of that part. And funnily enough, one of the papers sort of found out. And then at the time, I had a Brazilian girlfriend. And one of the British newspapers went up to my granddad's house again. I'm just bringing my poor granddad into again. And they knocked on his door and they said, oh, you know, and they actually offered him a huge amount of money and said, who's his girlfriend? And he said, I don't bloody know, Carmen Miranda, who's a famous Brazilian singer. And slammed the door in her face. And I went, yes, Grant, good lad.
But the fans, were they great? Like, once you enter that world?
Yes. I mean, at first they hated me.
Because, yeah.
You know, kind of David was so popular and sure. They were like, don't break Doctor Who. And everyone hated me. And I thought, oh, God, I'm just going to die. And it was an awful thing. But then eventually I hope that they've now accepted me. But, you know, the great thing about that show is that they love or they hate their doctor. So everyone has their doctor. And to some people, I will be their doctor. And to some people, David Tennant will be theirs, and et cetera, et cetera. So.
Well, that's a nice way of looking at it. We've heard a lot about your grandfather, which I'm very happy about.
Yeah, top boy. He's the top boy.
And some seems like a salty guy. You seem, again, very kind, very well put together. Certainly we see
me?
You on that show. Yeah, very polite. But then...
Thank you very much. Flashy will get you everywhere.
True story that you were... fight? Did you get in fights in school?
Oh, yes, I have had a fight at school.
Just one, though?
Well, yeah. Well, yeah. But one that was significant, I suppose.
Memorable?
Yeah, you know, ish.
Did you start it? What happened?
No, I didn't start it, actually. It was in history. And that was the one subject that I was in the top set for. I'm more intelligent than I look. But and you know, we were debating a point, and there was one very clever lad, chap, in school who was demeaning me, frankly, and my point of view. So then, you know, I proceeded. Anyway, I mean, you know, I leapt over the desk and told him I'd shove his trumpet up his ass. Because he was the school trumpeter.
Yeah.
And he was a smug pillock.
That escalated so quickly.
And then there was fisticuffs, and then I got suspended, and I went home, and I told my dad, and he laughed.
Okay.
And I thought I had him on side, and then I was very nonchalant about it, and then my dad was like, oi, rein it in, sort it out, you don't get suspended.
Well, I think if anything, he should have given that speech to his father, because obviously that's where it all started.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, hey, man, thanks so much for being here. Great to meet you.
Sir.
Congrats on the show.
Thanks, mate.
Matt Smith, everybody. Second season of The Crown is streaming its entirety on Netflix this Friday.
Hi, everyone. It's Sarah from Late Night. I'm here backstage with Matt Smith from The Crown, which will start streaming its second season this week. So you talked a little bit with Seth about the role of Prince Philip and your family's hesitation about you taking it on. What will you miss most about him when you transition over?
Oh, that's a very good question. Well, he's, I sort of like what a maverick he is, really. He kind of plays by his own rules and in a very difficult environment. You know, his wife was the queen and she was all powerful, but he still managed somehow to behave in the way that he wanted to, which when you're playing someone like that is quite sort of admirable. And he's got a great sense of humour.
Yeah.
And a great sense of wit. And he's, you know, he's sort of a brave, courageous, daft man, really.
And as Philip this season, he goes off on this trip, this extended trip.
Yes.
What places did you visit? Where did you guys film?
Well, I mean, in the series, we go to Papua New Guinea, Tonga, mm-hmm. Australia, you know, I mean, all these different islands and stuff. But actually, in reality, we just went to South Africa.
Okay.
But to many different locations in South Africa. So we was, you know, we're traveling sort of 5 to 10 hours away from Cape Town. Amazing beaches and sort of little islands and things that looked like little jungles in Tonga or Papua New Guinea. It was amazing, really.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful shot. Yeah. So I think one of the interesting things, at least for me as a viewer of the show, is being able to see how these episodes are like deep dives into subjects you might not know came up.
Yes.
Like the Lord Altrincham episode, for example. I had no idea that existed.
You've watched a lot.
Well, that's only watched six.
Okay.
I got four to go.
Okay.
But how has that been for you in terms of learning about the British royal family? Like, were those topics things that you knew about?
No, not at all. I mean, especially that particular topic. I mean, And actually, as you go on, you'll see there's a lot more about Prince Philip that we sort of learn as well, about his history and his heritage and the things that he's been through as a young man. And I think it sort of acts as part history lesson, part drama, part sort of, yeah, kind of fictionalized family drama. But actually, ultimately, if you go through those points in history, like, for instance, that Lord Altrincham, that was a real turning point for the Queen, yeah, because he changed public perception of her. And actually, at a time, if the royal family is to really endure and survive, it's got to maintain its sense of modernity, really, yeah, and you know, keep feeling modern and present.
Do you think, because you play this role and because you are British, mm-hmm, people ask you about the royal family all the time, particularly in America? Do they ask you, like, how you feel about...
They do now, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, about Harry and Meghan. Yeah, of course.
You get that, like, all the time.
It's cool, they're in love, you know, I wish them all the best, let's have a good time, and, you know, and then they're like, oh my God, it's amazing, because it's like, you know, it's so modern, like someone foreign's marrying into the royal family, and yeah, I'm like, Phil was Greek.
Right.
They called him Phil the Greek, you know, he was a Greek prince. Victoria married a German.
I think they're just excited she's American.
Yeah, which is great, because poor old Wallace wasn't allowed in the club.
Yeah, she wasn't welcomed as...
No, yeah. No, she was not welcome one bit. She was kicked out the door and told, you may not even come back to the country.
Yeah. Well, it was so nice to have you here. Thanks so much.
Thanks for
coming.
Thanks for having me. It's been really nice. He's a cool cat.
He is. He's, yeah, a good guy.
So are you. Thank you.
Oh, thanks.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.